It's just some miscellaneous stuff up here in front.
Do I get a chance to get my quiz 3 game?
Quiz.
For the D2L, so they get the 0 out of 15.
Yeah, no, I have it. It's in my pile of papers.
Okay. You got to sign up for the...
It's actually in the lab. So
oh,
go over
the
there. Mm-hmm. Yep, so go over there after class. All right, folks, let's review what's going on today and the rest of this week. We're going through what we can of Chapter 10. The stuff that I don't get to, I'll be able to adjust the grading on the final exam to account for that. So there will be questions on the final exam that, you know, not very many, two, three, or four of them that ask about material that we haven't covered. So just give those your best effort. Don't skip anything. Don't leave any blank, because if you actually get it right, that will only help you. But I'll adjust the way that it's scored so that you won't be penalized for stuff that we didn't cover. Okay? So we're starting presentations at 3:30 in the lab. So we have that half hour for you to be getting your presentation practiced and polished, and make sure you know who's saying what to everything. I do have a sign up on the board over in the lab, so if you have a preference about your time slot, go over there after class and sign up for it. Wednesday, I decided to make the Chapter 10 Mastering Chemistry worth extra credit. You're welcome. you'll get 5 points extra credit if you get 100% on that assignment, for instance. So it's due before class on Wednesday. It actually goes, that's fine. So remember our final exam on Wednesday, 1:30 to 3:30. Don't forget a non-programmable calculator. If you need to borrow one, you can see me today to make sure that I have enough, for instance. On the webpage, I have that study guide and the scoring information. That's all right together. Friday, lab project formal report is due in the Dropbox by 5 p.m. on Friday, so I'll probably have some suggestions for you when we're going through the presentations of things that you should include in your report, possibly beyond the things that I saw in your presentation, so be sure to take heed of that. On the webpage, I have links to the lab project page, the formal report guidelines, you know, so you have to have an abstract, for instance. You have to write out the procedure in past tense paragraph form, for instance, all that sort of stuff. My addendum that talks about how many sources you need, that sort of stuff, linked on the webpage. In case you're wondering, the D2L course will remain open until December 30 for you to check all your scores and so. So over this upcoming weekend is when all of the scores and final course letter grades will be in D2L. So you'll be able to see those over the weekend. I'll send out an email when everything is complete, so you'll know when to check it. But I cannot send any grades by email. You have to go into D2L and check it for yourself. Okay? That's about where we stand right now. Who has questions about any of this? Yes?
When's the deadline for teachers to have submitted?
Next Tuesday, I believe. Tuesday of next week. John?
Did you get any of the labs created?
Yeah, I actually made quite a bit of progress, but I didn't get them uploaded, so I've got probably about half of them ready. So tonight they'll be up.
Before we write our formal report.
Mm-hmm. There weren't very many surprises on it. Pretty much everybody got, you know, 9, 8.5, 9.5, stuff like that. Anyway, so I'll be getting those back into your drop boxes starting tonight.
Are we still going to have the opportunity to do a pre-break and reverse
tomorrow? I haven't really seen too many that were really, you know, worth your time to rewrite and resubmit. If there's a specific case, I don't know if we talked about something specific before or anything. If there's a specific case, I'll entertain that as a proposal from you. But really, there wasn't anything that was too, you know, out of left field that I saw so far anyway. So. Other questions? Well, let's get into Chapter 10. The major portion of Chapter 10 that we'll be talking about in here involves VSEPR, the SEPR theory. Valence shell electron pair repulsion. So, what's the valence shell? Outermost shell of electrons. Those are the electrons involved in bonding and properties and so on. So those are the important electrons. Electron pair repulsion. What does that mean? Well, electrons, they all have minus charges, so electrons push other electrons away from each other, right? We saw that with atomic size, for instance, or size of negative ions, that they got bigger because there was extra electrons because they repel each other. So electron pairs within the valence shell will repel each other in actual three-dimensional space to determine the shape of molecules. So what we're going to be doing... I call these things we'll be counting electron groups. So they could also be known as electron clouds, electron domains. There's a lot of names for them that you'll see. But essentially what I call one electron group would be one single bond. So we're talking covalent bonds here. So it could be a single covalent bond, could be a double bond, could be a triple bond, or an unshared pair of electrons. So it's a grouping of electrons that exists within the same amount of space around an atom. Okay? So even though a double bond and a triple bond have more electrons within that space, they still take up about the same space that a single bond takes up. And a lone unshared pair of electrons takes up about the space that any of those bonds would take up around an atom. Right? So there are five essentially major geometries that we're going to learn about that involve how many electron groups there are around an atom. So I could just rattle these off and you could write them down and try to memorize them, but I always thought this worked better if it's something that you can actually hold in your hands and feel and figure out why it is that this is actually the case. So... I'll hand some more out here in a second for that didn't get one. All right. So has anybody here done the trick where you tie two balloons together? It's real simple. Rather than tying one balloon up, you blow the balloons up and you hold them like that, and then you tie them together. So, that's right. Make them about that size.
double back or something like that.
Apart from each other. So each balloon, if we consider each balloon to be one of these electron groups we talked about, if there are two electron groups, that's a linear geometry. Looks like this. X is just my central atom. So the knot on your pairs of balloons is the central atom. Okay. The ideal bond angle, you just told me, is 180 degrees. Okay. Have the three of them. Hold that up, for instance, in the air. That's three electron groups. They repel each other. These balloons do, just like electron clouds would. Okay. How would you describe the shape of that?
Triangle.
Yeah, it's like a triangle. If you set that down on the floor, would it be raised up or flat or planar or not? Yeah, it would be planar. It would be what's called trigonal. Planar. If we have three things, like those three balloons, right, just like they're sitting on the desk there, they'll sit flat, okay, going out around each other. What's that bond angle? If a circle is 360 and we've divided by three, this do some fast math there. Alright. So you can take that third balloon away, and those of you that have the pairs, match your pair up with someone else's pair. So you don't even need to tie them, you just sort of link them right together. Take that third one away. They
have just two pairs.
She accepted. Oh, yeah. We'll use that. Good. Put those together. And get it actually pushed in. Push those balloons in. Like that. Look at this arrangement. Yeah, there you go. See, some of you started with the four of them flat like that,
But then I told you to push it, and it kind of snapped into a little better arrangement. Right? If the four of them are flat, they're actually more spread out than they have to be. If you hold that up in the air. This sort of structure where you have all four balloons down, all going out in their own directions, it's a three-dimensional structure. Now, when you set it down, you've got three sitting down and one that's sort of pointed up. And that's actually the most efficient way for four electron groups to occupy the same amount of space. It's called a tetrahedral arrangement because a tetrahedron, if you imagine a side, if you imagine a triangle where those three balloons are, you have a four-sided kind of pyramid to it. That's a tetrahedron. It's a four-sided object. And one way to draw a tetrahedron is to have one up, one sort of down and off to the side, and then a wedge line and a dash line. The wedge line is the one that's going out towards you, and the dash line is the one that's going away. So here, let me hold up your tetrahedron here. This would be an example of what I've drawn up on the board. One going up, one going just straight out into the left that's just right in the paper, okay? One pointed towards you, and one going backwards into the paper. So the one pointed towards you is the thick line. Okay? The one going back is the dash line. Okay? So that's the tetrahedral arrangement. See if I can pull some of these apart. And give me just one. A couple of you still have the three balloon arrangements. I wanted a couple of you to keep those. Because to get the five, what you need is a three balloon arrangement and a two balloon arrangement.
She's like a little kid at this
area. That's a three balloon arrangement and a two balloon arrangement. Move that a little bit, but it's an arrangement that's better. One arrangement where everything all fits together really nicely. That's close. That's four sitting down and one pointing up. Move one of them a little bit so you have another one. Push the yellow and the red one together.
Oh, there you go.
They don't quite want to stay there.
Yeah. So, why is this called trigonal bipyramidal? We started with trigonal planar, just with the three. That's the three that are around the midsection, right? Bipyramidal, because you have a pyramid going up and a pyramid going down underneath it. So, three around the middle, and then one up and one down. That's actually the best arrangement for five. So I'll draw one up, one down, one straight off to the side, and then one forward like that, and one backward. Okay. So if you hold those balloons up, you should be able to have one pointed straight off to the left, and then there'll be just one forward and one back. Three of them can be in the plane of the paper, for instance. Can you see how there are sort of two different kinds of positions in this geometry? It's not totally symmetrical. It sort of has a top and a bottom to it and sides. So the names of those positions are, here, let me draw them in. The up and down ones, the only ones that are straight across from each other are called axial.
Because if you imagine this like the Earth revolving, the Earth has an axis that goes straight from the North Pole to the South Pole that it revolves around, okay? Then there are three around the midsection that are called equatorial. Okay. So, like the Earth, the axis and the equator. Okay. So, there are only two that are straight across from each other. The others are three that are evenly spread right around the middle. There are two different bond angles in this one. What is the bond angle between any axial and any equatorial position? Yeah, look at this. These are straight up and down. All these are perpendicular to them. So this is a 90 degree bond angle. What's the bond angle between any two equatorial positions? Yeah, it's 120. Around there. And, yeah?
So the equatorial, does that include the two on that side?
Yep. Yep, the three.
The ones that, like, off in the distance.
Yep. Here, I'll call them the green ones. There are three of them. There are two axial and three equatorial. Okay. What's the bond angle between the two axials? 180. Okay. So the axial ones are 180 degrees apart. All right. Now, this might be a little tough. We need to fit one more balloon on somewhere.
Yeah, this one's small. We can
get it right here. Yeah, you can sort of see the spot where it would fit, right? Some of you originally had the kind that had four sitting flat and one up, so if you did that, one would fit right there. Whoa!
Got it.
So, there it is. Here, I'll draw it for you. It's called octahedral. Don't confuse that with eight things around it. There are six things. John has a really nice one. There. Draw it like that. Why is it called octahedral? Well, yeah, it has eight faces. The tetrahedron had four faces. If you find each triangle, there are four triangular faces on top and four triangular faces on the bottom going around. Yeah. So if you know the three coordinate axes in three-dimensional space, you know, x, y, and z, that's what an octahedral shape looks like. So you could draw it like that with one with up, down, left, right in the plane, and then one forward and one back. Or you can draw two coming at you, and two going away. Okay. It's just sort of a difference in perspective, whether you're looking straight on at the front two or whether you've got them sort of canted there. How many do you have there? Seven? That doesn't work quite as well. What's the bond angle in for all of the octahedral positions? Even though it looks like they're different, they all have the same bond angle from each other. Yeah, and if you look at the balloons, you can see it pretty easily. They're all 90 degrees. What's that? Oh yeah, there are six bonds or six atoms that are attached, but there are eight faces.
Okay? Oh.
If we go back to three-dimensional geometry, an octahedron is a shape with four triangles on the top and four triangles on the bottom.
If you draw planes
across. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Because you can define a plane by 3 points. So if you define each of those 3 points to making their planes. So.
What are the angles
on the tetrahedron? So tetrahedral, it's got to be what? Got to be between 120 and 190. It's actually 109.5. we did a little trigonometry, we'd be able to figure that out with some triangles and the Pythagorean theorem and stuff like that. But 109.5 is the ideal bond angle for a tetrahedron. Yeah, you should probably be aware of these bond angles. So, but if you can visualize these balloons in your head, you should be able to figure it out. 109.5 is sort of the only one that you have to actually memorize. But so be aware of that number. That's going to be important to us. Okay. So, based on how many groups of electrons are around an atom, those electron groups will take on one of these basic shapes. Does that make sense, everybody? Any questions about that? Yeah.
So then within there, there's still all kinds of shells within each.
Yeah. Each. Yeah. Yeah. So in something like that, there's an atom in the middle and an atom at the tip of each of those balloons. You can think of it like that. So, yeah. So within each atom, it has its own shells. This is for the, this is the shape of the entire molecule. No. Okay? So, here's just some pictures for you to refer to. I think there's a picture of an octahedron on here. Yeah. There's a picture of an octahedron that has four triangles on top and four triangles on the bottom. It turns out that sulfur hexafluoride, remember sulfur hexafluoride, that gas that makes you talk all low like that? It has an expanded octet, right? How many electrons are around sulfur in this one?
A lot.
Just around sulfur? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Okay. So it has an expanded octet. How many electron groups are around sulfur, though? Are we counting an electron group as a bond or a lone pair of electrons? Just on the sulfur, just on the central atom. Yeah, it's electron groups. That's why it takes on this octahedral geometry. Okay? PCl5, five electron groups, takes on trigonal bipyramidal. Okay? We commonly draw something like methane going up, down, left, right, but the actual structure of it is tetrahedral, just like the four balloons fit together with three sitting on the surface and then one pointed straight up from there. Okay? So let's look a little more closely at this. What we looked at is called electron group geometry, just the arrangement of those electron groups that we talked about. But molecular geometry is the arrangement of the actual atoms themselves. And sometimes those two are the same, but sometimes they're different. Okay? They're the same only if bonding electron groups are attached to the central atom. So if all the electron groups on the central atom are all bonds, like they were in the examples on the last page, right? Six bonds around them made six electron groups. Okay? But non-bonding electrons, if there are lone pairs on the central atom, that will change the molecular geometry. So when we're drawing Lewis structures now, we have to look extra careful to see if there are lone pairs on the central atom or not, because that'll have a very important, very key influence on the actual shape of these molecules. They're counted as an electron group, so we'll still have all these basic electron groups that we've made, but now we may not have atoms attached in one of those balloon positions. There could just be a cloud of electrons within those positions. So the molecular geometry is only looking at where the atoms themselves are in these geometries. So let's start with the tetrahedral geometries. So CH4. Right. We draw a simple structure. We already saw that one. Right. That's just a carbon with four hydrogens. How many electron groups are around the carbon? Four. Are there any lone pairs on the carbon of this structure? 2, 4, 6, 8. It has its octet, right? There's no lone pairs. Okay. Electron group geometry comes from the number of electron groups. So what did we call it when there were four electron groups? Yeah, four balloons made a tetrahedral. No lone pairs on that central atom. So what can we also say about the shape of the molecule itself? Yeah, it's also tetrahedral, right? Because there are hydrogens on each of those four balloons, right? The molecular geometry is also tetrahedral. And the structure in three dimensions might look like what we drew for a tetrahedron before, with one forward and one backward. Let's just call that three-dimensional structure. So the actual structure of CH4 would have three of those hydrogens sitting down and one pointed straight up from that. Okay? What else do I need on the Lewis structure of NH3? Yeah. Right. If we add up the number, right, 5, 6, 7, 8, but I only have 6 showing, okay, you can also sort of tell from the octet rule that nitrogen needs a pair of unshared, non-bonding electrons. Right on. Okay? So, how many electron groups are around the central atom? Our definition of electron group were single bond, double bond, triple bond, or lone pairs. So there are 4 electron groups. Okay? If I had that tetrahedron, right, that balloon that had 4 electron groups, okay, that is the electron group geometry. Okay? But there's one lone pair. So on that tetrahedron, okay, 3 of those will have atoms attached, okay, but the 4th one will just be a cloud of electrons. Okay? This lone pair of electrons will take up the same amount of space as a bond will, but we don't see anything there. Okay? When we're doing molecular geometry, we're only looking at just where the atoms themselves are. So I'm going to draw its structure like this, looking an awful lot like this CH3, but instead of drawing another bond in this 4th position, I'm going to draw a pair of electrons that sort of looks like a kind of cloud. Okay. That's why in a lot of these model kits, if they're done properly, the nitrogen, the one with the 3 holes in it, does not have 3 holes just evenly right around the middle. Okay? It has 3 holes that are all sort of pointed downwards. Okay. Anybody see that? See how it's not flat? The 3 bonds are pointed downward like a tripod. What is it that's making these 3 bonds push downward instead of being flat? Yeah. The lone pair of electrons that we don't see takes up that 4th tetrahedral position. Okay? So that's why if there's a lone pair of electrons on the central atom, that influences the shape of it. It still has a tetrahedral electron group geometry, if we're counting the bonds and the lone pairs, and that defines all the angles. Okay? But in the actual molecule, if we could see the atoms, okay, we would see the 3 that are pointed down and an empty space that's taken up by that pair of electrons. Okay? So this molecular geometry is actually called trigonal pyramidal. What did I call it when I only had 3 electron groups? When you just tied 3 balloons together, trigonal planar, right? You had 3 that were all flat, right? We had 3 balloons that would sit down flat on a desk. Now, I would have actually 4 balloons, but 3 of those would be bonds, and the 4th one is that pair of electrons. Does that make sense? Okay. So the molecular geometry, just looking at the atoms, is called trigonal pyramidal. If I put my hydrogens on here, This molecule is not planar. It's pyramidal. Looks like a pyramid. Okay? I've got three that sit on the base, and then the central atom that comes up in a point. So, okay? You can right there. Water What else do I need in water? Remember, oxygen always follows the octet rule. Carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, chloride. So, regular Lewis structure like that. How many electron groups? Four. How many lone pairs? So, electron group geometry. Yeah. Again, with the four balloons. Okay. But if I have four balloons, does anybody have four balloons anymore? Five balloons there. Maybe not there four balloons anymore. So let's just base it off of this one.
Let's look at this one.
If now two of those are attached to atoms and two of those are lone pairs, how would you describe the way the atoms will be arranged? Will they be straight out from each other? What's that?
I think it would be linear.
Linear? If you had a tetrahedron.
I'll make a tetrahedron for that.
Let's do two yellows and two oranges. One yellow, it's yours. Okay.
So is that the largest one?
Yeah, apparently. All right, well. All right. So here's our tetrahedron. Okay. Central atom is in the middle. Okay. Two, let's say the two red ones are the pairs of electrons. Okay. And these two yellow ones are what are attached to the H's. Yeah. So you see the H's are not straight apart from each other. If my central atom is right in the middle, okay, even if I made it like the tetrahedron up above, okay, I would have one hydrogen pointed down and to the right, one pointed straight up. Okay? So, how did you describe that? Yeah, that's actually what it's called. There are a lot of ways to draw this. That might be one of them, for instance. I started with a tetrahedral framework, but only have hydrogens on two of those positions. What we can also do is a little more commonly shown like this. Now, remember, these aren't bonds. I just use wedges to show which direction those clouds are going, but that's like this, where I have HOH, an electron cloud going towards you, and an electron cloud going back. So water is not a linear molecule. Even though we like to sort of draw it like this, the HOH are not 180 degrees from each other. They're closer to what? 109.5 degrees from each other. It's a bent molecule. The electron groups are tetrahedral, but the atoms themselves make up this bent shape. See that? And there are a couple of nice three-dimensional pictures of that. It turns out that lone pairs repel the bonds a little more than a bond actually would. Okay? So a lone pair takes up actually a little more space. So the ideal bond angle is 109.5. Nitrogen with one lone pair, okay, it repels the atoms, the bonds a little bit further, so it squeezes those bonds together a little bit. And water with the two lone pairs squeezes them a little further yet. Okay? So you do not need to know actual bond angles for things. You only need to know the ideal bond angle, and then know that if there are lone pairs, that bond angle will be a little less because of a cloud of electrons takes up a little more space than a bond does.
So, here to draw, like, in the book, they don't show it with the, like, the little diagrams. They don't show the lone pairs.
Yeah.
But do we have to?
If you're asked to draw the correct molecular geometry, you could draw it, you know, something like that. But you know, if you're asked to draw the complete three-dimensional structure of the molecule, you should include lone pairs on central atoms in the correct position.
Is that how that should
happen? I think so. Yeah. Okay.
Is that because they have a little more because there's no photons compared to
them? Yeah, I think that probably makes sense. In a bond, those electrons are attracted to, right, we have two electrons here, but they're also attracted to this proton. So they're held a little more tightly in here. Here we just have two electrons that take up the space that they want to. So yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So within the confines of this tetrahedral electron geometry, we could have a tetrahedral molecule, a trigonal pyramid molecule, or a bent molecule, by replacing each of those positions with a lone pair of electrons. Okay? Make sense so far? All right. Let's move on to those that have the five electron groups. So the trigonal bipyramid, okay, when we had five balloons, remember, we had up, down, right, one above and below, and then three along the equator. Turns out that lone pairs will only be placed in equatorial positions, okay, in the trigonal bipyramidal electron group geometry. Turns out they have a little more space. Okay? The bond angles, they are 120 degrees from the other ones in the midsection. Okay? If I had one up on the top, it would be 90 degrees from all three of those. Okay? So there's actually a little more space for a lone pair to be placed in equatorial positions. So remember that. If there are five electron groups, like in this molecule, okay, SF4, if you added up the total electrons, you would have to put two of them on the central atom to get to your total. Okay? We've had some where you've had all of your dots, but then you need more. You put them on the central atom. Okay? Turns out, right here, they don't go on an axial, they'll go around the equator, like that. So if I replace one of those groups with one lone pair, molecular geometry is actually called seesaw. Here, let me find my, it's a purple one. Here it is. So, 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, so here's my five-hold model. Electron pair in one of those. Put a bond up. Isn't that cute? Bonds down. Okay. And then two other bonds on the equator. So structure that looks like that. Remember, there's three along the equator, but I've replaced one with a lone pair now. Why is this called seesaw?
Seesaw.
If you have it like this, then that's your seesaw. So they call it that even though it's sort of sideways, but that's the best way to represent two that are 180 degrees from each other, and then two on a perpendicular plane that are 120 degrees from each other. So imagine it like a seesaw, like that. But here is the structure, right? Just like it's shown there. Okay? The electron group geometry is trigonal bipyramid, okay? Because we had those five balloons there originally. But molecular geometry, just where the atoms themselves are, is seesaw here. Just put some green ones on here so you can see them. Remember, whenever we say molecular geometry, we're only looking at the atoms themselves. Okay? So we can imagine we can't see that. It still takes up its space, but this is now a seesaw-shaped molecule. And SF4 actually looks like this. Okay? Two straight out, poking straight out from each other, and two sort of bent along the middle. Like that. So you have to have an understanding, first of all, of how five electron groups arrange themselves, and then that you're putting a lone pair on an equatorial position, not an axial position. Okay? If I need two lone pairs, like in this molecule, if we got to this one with two lone pairs, instead of having like that, I don't have another lone pair, I'll just have to leave it empty, but I replace two of the equatorial positions. Okay? Electron geometry still trigonal bipyramidal, okay? If you imagine these electron pairs here. But look at what the molecular geometry is called. It's T-shaped. Okay? It's actually flat. Okay? All of the atoms themselves will fit into one single plane, but they'll be 90 degrees and 180 degrees apart from each other. So believe it or not, they're BRF. F4 is actually a T-shaped molecule. Okay. Just looking at the formula, you might think it was tetrahedral, but because of those lone pairs of electrons on the central atom, it actually forces it into this bizarre shape. Okay. Then finally, if I go and replace that third one on the equator with another lone pair, got a real simple shape. This is a linear molecule again. But there are three lone pairs of electrons taking up these equatorial positions now. Okay? But molecular geometry itself is linear. Okay? So when I ask you for electron group geometry, what does that take into account? Yeah, the bonds and the lone pairs. When I ask you for molecular geometry, what does that look at? Yeah, just the bonds, okay? Just where the atoms have attached to the central atom. Okay? So it's very important that you know that distinction and are able to work with that. Okay. If I start out with the octahedral arrangement, add my bonds to that, replace one of them, and remember, these are all equivalent now, so I can replace any one of them with a lone pair. I can actually put my own lone pair back on there. Okay. So it looks like this. Still octahedral electron geometry, but now molecular geometry. It's called a square pyramid or square pyramidal. So the pyramids in Egypt have a square base to them, and then they have triangular faces that come to a point up on top. So square pyramidal is actually like a Egyptian pyramid. So four and the central atom are planar, then one goes up from that. If I need a second lone pair, like in this molecule, notice there are still six electron groups, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's still that octahedral model that we're using. But now, if I want to replace a second one, right? If I want to have two lone pairs and four bonds, the lone pairs will go opposite each other, so one above and one below. And now we actually do have a molecule that is flat with four all in the plane.
How do you handle one electron by itself?
Is my little dot there reminding you of that? A single electron can occupy electron group as well. We're not going to deal with any radicals in this course, but a single electron would occupy that same sort of space. So, square planar, what everybody thought CH4 originally was, but CH4 is tetrahedral because there's no lone pairs. Now, I have a lone pair going down, a lone pair going up, that forces these four groups to be planar to each other. Okay? So, that's it for that page. On my summary here, I have, starting with number of electron groups, and we can detect the patterns here. Okay? Electron groups 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, okay? Those were the balloon models that we made originally. And then starting out with no lone pairs, and then successively replacing the bonds with lone pairs. Okay? But remember, in each of these cases, with the same number of electron groups, the overall structure of it is the same. Okay? The angles, for instance, are the same. But we're just replacing one of those positions with a pair of electrons, which does not count when we look at molecular geometry or molecular shape. Okay? So linear. So just two groups is linear. There's nothing else you can do with that. Three groups, if there are three atoms, it's trigonal planar. So that BF3 would sit flat. And we actually drew the structure of that one. Boron is short of its octet in order to have no formal charges. Okay? SO2, that's actually the best resonance structure with the two double bonds, but it still has a lone pair on the central atom, on that S. So that actually makes it bent. So we saw bent with water before. If we have just two groups, if we have just two bonds with any number of lone pairs, it's called bent. Okay? With 3 and 4, anyway. Okay? So SO2 is a bent molecule. Those O's are not straight across from each other. They're bent because that pair of electrons on the central atom has to take up that space. We did the tetrahedral ones, right? CH4, NH3, H2O, right? Tetrahedral, trigonal, pyramid, and bent. The fives, okay? If we've got all five atoms, it's that trigonal bipyramidal that we talked about. The electron pairs that we add will go onto equatorial positions. Okay? So if there's just one, we have that weird seesaw shape. If there's two, it ends up being T-shaped. If there's three, it's just linear. I guess if there were four, it would be linear too, because there would only be two atoms in the molecule. But that doesn't happen very often. Okay. Similar thing happening down here. Octahedral, square pyramid. You know, you could put that in any position. You could put that lone pair in any position number because they're all equivalent. Okay. Square planar. Don't put two lone pairs next to each other in octahedral. You want to put them across from each other so they'll repel the least. Then you end up with square planar, like we have here. Okay? So you can use this sheet for reference when you're practicing, but on our final exam, there will be a question or two that gives you a formula and asks you what the molecular geometry is of it. So let's practice that a little bit. So IBR5, it's a weird formula, but it has an iodine in the center and 5 bromines around. Okay? I want to know the electron group and molecular geometry of it. I want its flat Lewis structure and its three-dimensional Lewis structure. So what do you need to do before you can draw a flat Lewis structure of it? Yeah, you need to make sure you've counted the correct number of valence electrons. So both iodine and bromine, they're in group 7. Okay. So they'll have 7 valence electrons. I'll give that to you. But get your total, okay, put an iodine in the middle, and start distributing your electrons. The important thing now is to tell whether or not the central atom has lone pairs. Okay. Because that's going to be crucial in determining how many groups are on the central atom, and what its molecular geometry would be. So take just a moment and see if you can figure this one out. Seven. Whole goal, remember, the whole thing is to figure out from that total number, what's the total number, by the way? 42? Should be 42. 6 times 7. Okay. So from that total number, figuring out how many dots, if any, are on the central atom is probably the key to what we should do with that. And you can do it without counting every electron if you know that there are 6 dots on every bromine, for instance. Dots. Okay. There's one line and 6 dots. And if there are 5 single bonds, if you start out with that, okay. I've got 40 accounted for, just by the bromines and the bonds. So I'll tell you honestly, the major thing that's neglected by students when we do this is the arithmetic at the beginning. A lot think you can just make a structure and try to fill in octets, and it'll work. But remember, all these big atoms have expanded octets a lot of times, so it's without figuring out what the actual total is, there's no way to figure out how many electrons are on the central atom. So gotta get that total.
This has 6 electron pairs. This has 5. So count the number of electron pairs first.
So you guys all got 42. It's flat Lewis structure. We're not worrying about angles or anything. I'm just going to draw 5 bromines. So we've got 10 here. Got 6 on each bromine. That gives me 40. So what'd you put on the central atom?
2.
All right. How many electron groups are on the central atom? 2. Which gives us what electron group geometry? Yeah. Imagine 6 balloons, right? Up, down, left, right, front, back. Yeah. All right. So now you can start redrawing it, right? Put the central atom, put in the octahedral shape, however you want to do it. Up, down, left, right in the paper, and then one towards you and one going back, for instance. Okay. All the bromines. And those, one lone pair will be on one of those positions. And remember, in octahedral, they're all equivalent positions, so you can put that one lone pair wherever you want. What is this molecular geometry called? This is called square pyramidal. If I flipped that over, I'd have four bromines sitting on the plane and then one bromine sticking straight up. Okay? That's the actual process that you need to go through when you're given a formula and you're asked what the shape of that molecule is. Okay? The electron groups have their own geometry, then the molecule itself has a geometry. Okay? So try this one. Try ICl2 minus. Don't forget to take care of that minus. What do you do with that minus in your total? Minus charge means you've added one electron, so don't forget to do that. If you forget that in this one, you'll have an odd number and you'll have an unpaired electron somewhere, and that does not normally happen. How many total dots are this? 22. Double check your structure to make sure 22 electrons are actually shown. Remember, the central atom can have its octet expanded, but atoms on the outside cannot. Have to be the octet all the atoms. Central atom. Any lone pairs on the central atom? Three lone pairs. That's how you fit 22 electrons in the structure. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22. Right? And if you failed to answer this first question correctly, that affects your answer right here. So make sure you do that math right. Electron pair, or electron group geometry is what? How many electron groups are there? Five? Trigonal bipyramidal, which means I can draw my iodine, I can start drawing the structure. If I have something trigonal bipyramidal, it's going to look like that. There will be two straight across from each other, and then three going around the midsection, like a hula hoop. Right? Those three lone pairs, where will those go on the structure? Around the equator. The equatorial positions have more room for lone pairs than the axial positions do. Molecular geometry is linear. If for some reason we would have had a molecule with two fewer electrons than this, it would have been just bent. Right? If I would have taken two of those away, I'd now have four electron groups, and we'd have tetrahedral, and it'd be like water. Right? So I'd have two lone pairs and two bonds. That's how this works. Okay. Who has questions about how to do a problem like this? Again, I remind you, I beg of you, that when you need to figure out a three-dimensional structure, get the total number of electrons first. That's the first thing you have to do. And if you don't do that, you're going to have the wrong number of electrons on the central atom, and that's going to throw the shape off. Okay? So it all comes from adding them up first. Ready? There are a couple of important consequences to that. Let's talk about how to determine if a molecule is polar or nonpolar based on those shapes that we talked about. So the dipoles of polar bonds add together geometrically to make a dipole moment for the whole molecule. We drew dipole moments of individual bonds, okay, based on electronegativity here. Let's draw that water structure. Okay. One lone pair back, one lone pair forward. Okay. What's the molecular shape of water called? Bent. Okay. Four electron groups, so it's tetrahedral electrons, but the atoms themselves are bent. Now, do you remember what property it was that determines what direction electrons will be pulled within those bonds? Remember what that was called? Electronegativity, and how do you figure out whether one element is more electronegative than another? Where it is on the periodic table, right? The most electronegative elements are what direction? They're up northeast, up, but fluorine is the most electronegative, right? So what's more electronegative, O or H? O is right next to fluorine, right? So I can draw dipole moments for both of those bonds. Okay. If I only consider those two dipole moments, those two add together like vectors do. Okay. And if you have physics or anything, you know that adding arrows together adds, it just sort of takes the average of those arrows. Okay. So And you can think of it a lot of ways. You could think of the horizontal components of those two canceling each other out, but they both have a vertical component. They both go up a little bit, okay? But they're both pointed towards each other. Okay? So if those were two forces that were acting together like that, what direction would the resulting vector point?
Straight up.
Yeah, it would point straight up. So, yeah. Well, if I draw straight lines like these, then those are in the plane of the paper. So this one would be straight up. That should be. This is the net dipole moment. Okay. The actual one that I drew here is probably pretty accurate. Just those two arrows adding up would give a real short arrow. But these electron pairs, they have their own dipole moment, right? Which way would a dipole arrow point for a lone pair of electrons? Where it points towards negative charges, essentially, right? Yeah, points towards the electrons, so... Usually you don't have to take those into account, but typically the net dipole moment will point towards lone pairs of electrons, just because those are concentrated portions of electron density. Okay? So molecules with a net dipole moment are polar. Okay? That's why water is polar. If we just drew water HOH altogether, that wouldn't account for its polarity. It's this three-dimensional shape that accounts for it. CO2 How are those oxygens bonded to the carbon in CO2? Double bonded? Any lone pairs on the central atom in CO2? I actually see this drawn an awful lot. What's wrong with that? Way too many electrons. You actually don't need to add them up if it's just carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, fluorine, because those always follow the octet rule. Okay? So, and then, you know, as long as you remember that carbon makes four bonds, then it's fine. But, you know, if you wanted to add them up, right, four... and 16 is 20? Let's see, 10, 12, 14, 15. No. Actually, 6 times 2, right? 12 and 4 is 16. So that would add up. This would not. What shape is the CO2 molecule? First of all, how many electron groups are around the carbon? Not 4. An electron group is defined as a single bond, a double bond, a triple bond, or a lone pair. There are 2 electron groups. One there, one there. A double bond takes up pretty much the same space that a single bond takes up. Okay? It's denser in its electrons, but same space. So since it is linear... and oxygen is more electronegative, what happens to those two dipole moments? They cancel. There is no net dipole moment. Water had a net dipole moment, so it was polar. That makes CO2 what? Nonpolar. Okay? So... I'm going to leave it at that for now. I'll invite you to practice with these ones. Draw three-dimensional structures, draw dipole moments, and then figure out how those dipole moments add up together to figure out whether it's polar or nonpolar. So I'll have this page completed, and you can check it in the printed notes. If you want to look through the stuff beyond this, remember I said there will be questions on the exam. over stuff that we don't cover. Your score will be adjusted, so you won't be penalized for that. But if you choose to look through that stuff and figure some of that stuff out, that's only to your advantage, right? Because you can get a little more credit. So if you're scavenging for some extra points, you know, spend a few minutes and go through the rest of this. Okay, so that's it for us. Lecture is over. I declare 1061 lecture to be completed.